Poetry on the Radio, poetry in and around the ACT. Today, Sandra Renew, a dab hand with a spray can, the first of two programs focusing on prize-winning poet Sandra Renew. Also in this episode, two poems from a recent reading at the Manning Clark House, where poets read a signature poem from their careers, and The Rhyming Bugle. I'm Kimberly K. Williams. Sandra Renew is a Canberra-based poet who has long explored such issues as gender, sexuality, and politics in her work. She was the winner of the ACT Writers Notable Awards for Poetry 2021 for her collection It's the Sugar, Sugar, published by Recent Work Press. She was also the winner of the 2020 ACT Writing and Publishing Award for Poetry for her collection Acting Like a Girl, from Recent Work Press, which was shortlisted for the 2020 ACT Book of the Year. It dealt with gender, sexuality, and coming out in the far north Queensland of the 1970s and 80s. Poetry on the Radio's producers, Peter Searles, Kimberly K. Williams, and Peter Monahan, spoke with her about her work, including her several highly regarded volumes of poetry and hybrid writing about growing up and coming out in northern Queensland. What started off as a single episode interview took on a life of its own, so you can hear what Sandra Renew had to say in two episodes of Poetry on the Radio, today and next week. We started by asking her about her two forthcoming books and some other recent ones.
We wanted to talk about a couple of new books that you've got coming out soon. You've also had a few books released recently that we'll cover as well, but maybe we'll just start with the new ones. Do you want to give us some information about those two new books you've got coming?
Sure. So the first one is V8 with P.S. Cottier. That's Ginninderra Press, launched Monday the 13th of February at Smith's in Civic. And it's going to be launched by Sarah St. Vincent Welch. And the second one is Apostles of Anarchy. That's a Recent Work Press launch on the 15th of May at Smith's. And I'd like to just thank the publishers there, Stephen Matthews of Ginninderra Press and Shane Strange of Recent Work Press, because without the printed word, we don't have a voice. Poets rely on our friendly publishers.
And the work V8 is, you mentioned it's a collaboration. How did that come about and how was the process of collaborating on that for you?
Ah, well, that's an interesting story. So Penelope Cottier is a well-known poet around town and we were sitting together in Smith's one night and we realised that every time we each did a reading we had poems about cars. So then it was her idea, actually. She decided that it would be really good if we had a small collection. And we sat down and we found all the poems that we'd written about things with wheels. So there's also bicycles and other things. And then we wrote a few new pieces. We sent stuff backwards and forwards. And we realised we had a collection. And one of the bits of the collection is that we each picked one poem that the other one of us had written, and we wrote a little follow-up piece in response. So there's a poem that Penelope wrote, and I wrote a response because I was so shocked by her poem about garden gnomes. And then she picked one of my poems, and she wrote a response to that too, so that's in that book. But we just really enjoyed it as a collaboration. And it's a very accessible book, actually. We found that the people that like it are people that often don't read poetry. Mm-hmm. It has serious themes about gender and the automotive industry and what we construct as desire in terms of cars and so on. But as a book that you can pick up and have a little bit of a fun read, it's a very nice book.
The other book, Apostles of Anarchy, Do you want to tell us a bit about that one as well?
Yeah, well, that's a very different book. That one came about because I spent a lot of time in my young adulthood living and working in and around Townsville in far north Queensland. And that was a very difficult period in Queensland's history in terms of attitudes to gender and the police corruption and so on. And so what I did there was I found I had a small newspaper archive, and I took out headlines from the archive and I wrote pieces to as responses to those headlines. And then I tried to follow through some of the issues into the present day. So I won't say a lot more about that one because it's going to be launched a little bit later, but it's a very different book. It's not all poetry. It has some prose pieces, and it's a book that was fueled by rage and outrage, which I still feel.
Yeah,
but I've calmed down now.
Is it that rage or outrage that led you to be collecting the newspaper clippings in the first place, or was that always going to be material for poetry, do you think?
No, when I was living and working there, it was in the times of, some of the listeners may not remember this, but a real paper was, you could buy a paper and you would open it on the kitchen table and look at the headlines and so on. And it was so shocking at the time that I cut pieces out, articles, and I've got no idea how that little file survived the moves that I made from North Queensland to end up in Canberra. And then I was tidying up, which I did during COVID, and I found the file. Mm-hmm. And I thought, oh, this can't be just left sitting there. So, and then Shane Strange, of course, was prepared to take the big step of saying he'd publish it, so let's wait and see what everyone thinks on the 15th of May.
If you had anything from one of those books with you, would you like to read something?
Sure. I've got, I'll read a bit that's in, I've got two very short pieces here. One of them is in V8 with the one I did with Penelope, but it was written in 2018. And I have another one that goes with it. So when I look at these two, it was written in 2013. And these were written as a response to the work that I did when I was working with some of the humanitarian aid organisations overseas in Afghanistan and so on. I was working in post-conflict areas, they called them. It was still a bit dicey, but so these are responses or memories from that time. And there's a couple of pieces like this in V8 that I resurrected. So the first one is, She Still Remembers. She still remembers the brass teapot trampled under soldiers' boots, but then retrieved, dusted off, and carefully handed back. And the second one is, take one small vase of roadside flowers. Take one small vase of roadside flowers, pick it up from the floor, out of the way of crushing boots. Replace it on the packing crate table. Let it sit in the silence of the empty shipping container. Let the small plastic truck, stable enough on three wheels, sit beside the vase. Let the concussive boom of big guns, the rattle of AK-47s, the grenades, the IEDs come closer, vibrate the metal walls, expend itself on nothing. Let the empty room wait.
I always think that when poets can write about what isn't there, when they can write about absence through sound, through presence, through image, that just always resonates for me. I don't think that's easy to do at all.
No, and I do have that in mind, because if you look at writing the present in the sort of things that I write, which is looking at some of the very, to me, important social issues like gender and conflict and so on, when you try to write about those things, if you write about what you see the present, it can be very disturbing and unpleasant and a bit gratuitous. If you can write about what is around it, which is the unspoken, then you're bringing that to light, and I think that's really important.
Yeah, it just unleashes like a really quiet kind of power. Clear from the discussion already, then, is that you've been really generative the last so many years. You've had 4 or 5 books, if you include the ones that are coming.
Yes, 5.
5, yeah. So I'm wondering how COVID and all the restrictions and the unanticipated change in society and the usual formats of book launches and things like that. How has having extra time, what has been the impact?
Sure. Well, one of the impacts was that I did write some things about living in COVID and the experience of lockdown and all of that. And I've written quite a bit of those sorts of things. But the big thing for me in terms of the number of books was that enforced shutdown gave me time to look at material that I already had, not stockpiled, but, you know, as a poet you write a lot and you don't publish a lot and it just gets to be there. What the COVID times did for me is gave me time to really look at the whole body of stuff that I had and do editing and shaping and trying to put it into the book ideas. And then, of course, having the 2, Ginninderra Press and Recent Work, were really generous in picking them up, so that was very helpful. But it gave me time to do the editing and thinking about what I already had there. That was really important. And I don't know that I would have got to that, but you do have once you're not thinking about readings and public things and all of that, you have a lot of time left just to tidy your drawers.
But you also had then books come out like Acting Like a Girl, but that's really was the start of COVID.
Acting Like a Girl, that was actually published in the year before COVID.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Okay.
And then the prizes happened in the year after. But what we didn't have then was the public readings and letting, so that there was no opportunity to really get the work out to have people know about it and read about it. And we did some things online. We Zoomed our way happily. But I find that the Zoom lacks a little bit in terms of the connection with the audience when you're trying to read.
So have you had an opportunity since lockdowns and everything was over to read some of that material publicly?
Yes, yeah, Smiths did a really good job trying to keep some of those things viable and open. And this year, I've got a lot of opportunity to do that. And I think last year I did some readings at the Cobargo Folk Festival, for example. So there's things that are all starting to come back and look up, and there's time and space now to do those.
I have a question about The Ruby Red's Affair. I really enjoyed this book. So The Ruby Red's Affair is broken into 6 parts, and each part has generally a few poems, but part 2 has quite a few. So I was wondering how you went about designing it, creating it, thinking about how to structure it.
It's a coming out story. It's essentially a lesbian story, but it was described by one of my early readers as an exploded moment. So what I was trying to do is to encapsulate in a story the idea of a coming out, a woman going to a dance and seeing someone that she really thought, oh, I could have a go here. But then it doesn't work, so, you know, that spoils the story. But it's trying to make a moment stretch through the book.
Mm.
So it's playing with time and place,
yes.
And then it's also playing with the poetic structure, because it's partly the narrative linking of this is what happens, this is what happens, this is what happens.
As I read through the book and then even just look at the table of contents, it feels like there's movement. It feels like it isn't just a breaking it into parts for like organizational sake, but that there's something more.
Yes, well, that's one of my favorite books.
Mm.
It's very serious in the themes, but it's also hopefully a bit of fun to read. When I was thinking I wanted to do that, I had the poetry pieces, and I was trying to work out what order and how to present it and mm-hmm. so on. And I was very inspired by Dorothy Porter, The Monkey's Mask, over a period of my writing. And I suddenly remembered her book, and I thought if I had it as a narrative, The Ruby Red's Affair, that might work. But when I put all the poetry pieces together, it didn't have a clear narrative movement.
Yes.
And I wanted it to have a story so that someone could see why and where each of the poetry pieces had some relevance mm-hmm. and importance. So I put them in the order of the coming out story, and then I wrote the narrative specifically to locate each piece in that story and to give it a movement so you could read through as a story. And I hadn't done that with my work up till then. I'd really done collections.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a long form poem in a way, but that all the pieces are written in different forms, so
right.
It's not like it's a standard set of pages that you look at all the pieces. There's some formal form, there's some free form, there's bits of story, narrative, prose, there's a bit of flash fiction.
So it's a mixed mode sequence is what how I would term it.
Yes, it's a hybrid form,
yeah.
Really.
Yeah.
That is people that are doing hybrid forms are actually making them up now.
Right.
Like this, not they can't thumb through the poetry thesaurus and go hybrid form doesn't tell you a lot. So people that are wanting to do a little bit more, it's a creative, I don't know how you describe it, but the people that are doing it are looking for more ways of putting more into that poetry
right.
reading.
It adds it maybe a kind of a depth or a layering.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, it gives it a different structure and depth, really.
But as a reader, it also gives it a kind of a spontaneity, I think, because you don't know what you'll encounter next when you turn the page.
Yes.
I find that that's the moment you're playing with time. The impulse, especially for women poets, seems to be to start playing with structure, breaking it, making it hybrid. There's a real pattern of that since about the 1970s.
Yes. So, yes, it has. It's a palimpsest yeah. of layering. And someone could pick it up and read it and it would be just a story, a coming out story. But if you wanted to, if you knew more about the gay and lesbian scene, or you'd done some work in feminist theory, mm-hmm. then there's it comes from that as mm-hmm. well. Mm-hmm. So there's a deeper read if you want to puzzle through some of the pieces.
Mm-hmm. prize-winning Canberra poet, Sandra Renu. Next week, we'll speak some more with her about her work, particularly about how she writes about political and social issues that interest her and that she has lived. V8, Sandra Renu's book, co-written with P.S. Cottier, will launch on Monday, February 13th at 7 p.m. at Smith's Alternative in Civic. At a recent reading at the Manning Clark House in Forest, some 20 poets read a signature poem from their careers. Here are two of them, Paul Hetherington and then Jackie Malins. Introduced by the outgoing 4-year host of the Manning Clark House reading series, Hazel Hall.
Paul Hetherington has published 17 full-length collections of poetry and prose, probably more by now. He's professor of writing at the University of Canberra, head of international poetry studies there, joint founding editor of the international online journal Axon Creative Explorations. He founded the International Prose Poetry Group in 2014. He contributed to poetry at Manning Clark House for several years in its early days and has always been a supporter of this program. So thank you very much, Paul.
Thanks, Hazel, and thank you for 4 years of wonderful poetry. I really appreciate it. I'm just going to read a short, relatively short, three-part prose poem called Rooms, partly because in the last half a dozen years or so I've been working on a lot of prose poems, and a lot of them have been around ideas of rooms and spaces, and this is one of the earlier of those. Rooms. One. When you are in the desert and undulations of dunes slide toward you, you may remember a room. Under shiny stars in the cold sweep of night, you'll hold that room close. And in blade-like morning, when light strikes the ground like scattered gemstones, you may stare at distance and know that room as if it were in your body, a place in which you're strong, no matter how small its dimensions. It is like a skin that knows the flow of your blood. It's where you discover the value of limitation. Two. Sometimes it contains a staircase. At other times, it's small and spare, smelling of plum cake and tart kumquat liqueur spilled on linoleum. Occasionally, it has ornate furniture and colourful half-pulled drapes. A boy hides behind a chest. A girl rubs a dresser's green satin between fingers. A dog pants, a bath runs nearby. The girl stands on tiptoe, looking through a cobweb window. Later, the boy sucks the inside of her thigh and she holds onto his hair. Sometimes the room is elongated high in a building. There are dark floorboards. Light squeezes through shutters. Three. Rooms are informed by what's no longer there. Light that wonders at you lying in a cot, space circling, dark drowning, walls like an unfixed firmament of mind. You grow up and forget those rooms, but they cling, become stairs without end, an intimate boudoir of dreaming, a lit mystery behind doors. Always old-fashioned, as if belonging to a different century. They are like early touch, haunting every exploration.
Now we have another very energetic poet. The work that she does in poetry is absolutely mind-boggling. Jackie Malins is a performance poet, writer, multidisciplinary artist and festival organiser. She's performed in many events and festivals and was an Australian Poetry Slam finalist in 2015. Her most recent publications, Cavorting with Time and F-Words, were both published by Recent Work Press. Jackie co-founded and organises Mother Tongue Multilingual Poetry. She's a paradigm mover and a superb coordinator of festivals and events such as Poetic City. Thank you, Jackie.
Well, Hazel, I'm blushing. I said, who is that woman? Signature poem, hey? Is it like, you know, greatest hits or something that you think really captures your voice? I went back a little bit in the catalogue, so this is one that I'm sure some of you at least have heard before. But, you know, it's one of those poems that just kind of lands and seems to resonate with lots of people. So, Time, My Tattooist. I wear fake tattoos of feathers. I've thought about permanent ink, but what design? I remember the pastel Monet print that once adorned my room, and I don't trust my taste to stand the test of time. But time tests us all. She can be my tattooist. She can choose. She's already punctuated my knuckles with stronger lines, traced stacked bracelets at my wrists, etched horizons across my forehead, and fanned crow's feet like the shadow of false lashes. She started subtle, knew I wasn't ready for anything too bold yet. But as each year I fear less, she dares me, eggs me on. She's starting on a pair of delicate spiderweb gloves, sketching a fine mesh across my décolleté, designing a high lace collar that will go all the way up my neck to my chin. At our next big session, she will start inking it in, making it indelible. She thinks I should go all out with a full face, cross-hatched mask. Go on, she taunts. Do it. Do it. One morning, my mirror will tell me that the night before I stumbled drunk into her parlour and said, yes, which I for sure won't remember. If her lines are like the score marks on glass, if you tap me sharply, then I might cleave, shatter, fall apart. But they might be like fine wires that bind me to myself, a net to hold me together in the face of inevitable dissolution.
Paul Hetherington and Jackie Malins at the Manning Clark House in Forest, where public poetry readings take place every last Thursday of the month at 7 p.m.
The Rhyming Bugle, poetry news and events around the ACT. Congratulations to Canberra-based poet Jeff Page, who has just been awarded the OAM, the Medal of the Order of Australia in the General Division, in the 2023 Australia Day Honours. Jeff was honoured for his service to literature as a poet. Speaking of Jeff Page, the next of his Jeff's Poetry at Smith's Alternative takes place on Monday, February 6 at 7 p.m. and features American poet Paul Kane and Canberra-based Moya Pacey. Also coming up this month on Thursday, February 24, is the next reading at Manning Clark House in Forest. It will feature Lucy Alexander, Andrew Moss and Luke Whitington. More on that in coming weeks. Poetry on the Radio is produced weekly on unceded Ngunnawal country in the studios of ArtSound FM. Series hosts are Kimberly K. Williams and Peter Searles, who produced the program with me, Peter Monahan. Special thanks to Annika Grant. Find out more on the Poetry on the Radio page under the Programs tab at artsound.fm. The music on today's program is from Melbourne-based pianist Andrea Keller's recording of the Wayne Shorter composition, Footprints. Our theme is an imagining of an ancient Greek hymn to the muse Calliope by Gregorio Paniagua and the Atrium Musica de Madrid.